There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And phone number, it hadn't changed, y'all. 343-0106 for a call or a text, 343-0106. And if you're on the FM Talk 106.5 app and you see that microphone icon on the front page, what that thing's for, y'all, is if you press that, lets you record a message, and it emails it to the show, and I can play it back there on the air. So that's another way to get in touch. And thank you. Today has been, y'all, I get it. I procrastinate sometimes, too. Y'all sending in questions for the mayoral event coming up on Thursday. I just ask you to be inside the city limits of Mobile, and I can redact your last name. I'd probably like to use your first name and what part of town you live in. And y'all have been doing a great job today. And then your question. So we'll get that in the mix. That's coming up from noon to 2 on Thursday during the Business Expo down at the Mobile Convention Center. In addition, it's like I said before we went to the news, it's not just all mayoral in this municipal cycle. It's also city council. And joining us to talk more about that, Mobile City Councilman District 4, Ben Reynolds. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Glad to be in studio.
And good to have you in studio. I like it when folks come in studio. I do take phone calls sometimes, but it's good to have people in studio. And I appreciate that in the past where you've, you know, cut time out in a phone call for me when things are happening at council. So let's talk about this. You ran fresh, right? You've seen this from the eyes of somebody who is running fresh for a job. Now with your time at the job, does it change when you're talking to people in your district?
Absolutely, it does. We still have the same goals, public safety, infrastructure, and redevelopment, same goals, but getting to those end goals, I have a different perspective of how to get there, and it takes strong relationships. It takes actually knowing how government works, who are the parties involved, you know, what it takes to move something from A to Z to get a job done.
Okay, so I always wonder that. Like, you know, people run in, they have a head full of ideas, a heart full of, you know, desire to do something, but then you do have to get into the mechanics of what you can and can't do.
There's no doubt about it. You know, and oftentimes, and I've seen it again in these campaigns when folks are running for office, it's very easy for folks to just point out the negative, you mm-hmm. know, just latch on the negative and say, this is a problem. We got to do something about that. Not a whole lot of solution there. But once you're in office, that's your job, is to figure out solutions. Unfortunately, because of the slowness of government and the inefficiency of government, and especially in the city of Mobile, where you got to have a supermajority vote, 5 votes, it takes a little bit of time to get a big project from start to finish that exceeds 4 years in some respects. And then mm-hmm. also big issues, you know, laws passed. It takes a little time to get it from start to finish. So we've got everything teed up very well for this next 4 years. So that's why I'm here.
And there's overall issues. And let's start with that. And then we can get more narrow into your district. But overall, public safety. I mean, you're getting the questions for the mayoral event coming up on Thursday. It's like, okay, I'm going to have some other sections other than public safety. But from your perspective as a councilman, not just District 4, but your councilman of the city of Mobile, public safety, not just everybody's for public safety, Ben. I mean, unless they're a crackhead out there, everybody's for public safety. But how? Right? How do we do better?
Well, you listen to the people that know how to fix it. And that's what we did when we came into office. One of the first things we did, if you recall, there was this big backlog of cases mm-hmm. surrounding COVID. We had to hire new judges right when we got in, you know, on the city council. I don't know if you know it or not, but we hire the municipal judges. And what we found, there was this large backlog of cases. So instead of just hiring new judges, we added new judge positions, 2 additional judge positions. That certainly helps move things along, bringing prosecutions forward. Also, the district attorney's office. I know he's been on quite a few times, and their funding source is very odd and peculiar, where they get a lot of revenue from bad checks, and it's a big portion of their budget.
I said the other day, I think when Blackwood was on, I said, I need y'all to pass more bad checks to be able to fund the department, but that's not a thing anymore.
That's right. So we recognize, you know, you listen to the people who are doing the job. We recognize that they have this shortcoming, and they need to bring cases to prosecution quicker. And so what we have done is we've ponied up and been supplying, I think, about $500,000 a year to the district attorney's office to try to help combat these crime issues. You know, as a legislator, and you're talking about capital expenditures and things you can do to try to make your area more safe. And I mean, we've installed tremendous amounts of safety lighting, cameras, speed bumps, signage,
The camera thing for a second. Sure. Where are we in that? I mean, we had some pretty high profile, a murder, you know, and the cameras aren't working in the city. I mean, people said, who knew they weren't working? You know, mom always told me not to assume because, you know, it does. But you see a camera, you think, that thing's got to be working.
Well, that was my assumption as well. And, you know, it was a surprise to me to learn that those cameras were not working. Apparently, I guess, you know, complacency builds over the years that you don't have, or you think something's working and it's not, and then something happens, and then you go check it out and figure out that you got a problem. So the cameras were all different types of systems, which sort of happens over the years, just as laws, you know, you get some special arrangement for this person here or there or whatever, and next thing you know, you got 50 years of laws that are just scattered. Same thing applied. I think in this situation, you had different software, different hardware, and this unfortunate situation has now provoked the city and us legislatively to fund this new system that's all on the same page where it can be accessed routinely.
Good. We talk about infrastructure issues for the city of Mobile, too. And I think probably every district is going to have one for stormwater. You pick the district and somebody's got something. But for y'all, in four, what are your issues? How are you addressing those?
Well, currently, just citywide, it's my opinion that the city has over $1 billion infrastructure shortfall. And that's not including the bridge project.
What's that number again?
Over $1 billion.
Wow.
That's my opinion. That's not an official number, I guess. Depends on who you ask. But that's roadways, that's drainage ditches, that's sidewalks. And some of these projects, Sean, are such big dollar amounts. Like, you know, on U.S. Highway 90, if you got a bridge that needs to be replaced, I mean, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars. Well, there's a couple of those that's about at that point. You've got some drainage where you've had new developments come on that were built in a county standard that now are not necessarily holding back their water quite at the level that they were. Now it's a built environment. So in order to fix that or resolve some of those issues, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars to resolve one issue, which sometimes would involve tearing down a building or tearing down a parking lot or, you know, replacing pipe for miles and miles and miles. So we're taking bites at the elephant, you know, one bite at a time, especially in District 4, where I believe we've put more into drainage infrastructure than any other district.
Yeah, I'll say this too. I've said it on the air a bunch. This is not something, it's just like when I talk about sewer. It's not as much fun as a new sidewalk or a park and a ribbon cutting, or y'all are out there with the hard hats and the chrome-plated shovels. This is the stuff that you might not see going on, but it's the real work of government.
It's the boring old 32 dive right up the middle.
That's right.
Three yards at a time.
I wouldn't run a sweep, Coach. No,
that's right. And you know, I am happy to let you know that in my first 4 years, we have funded or resurfaced over 50 miles of roadways.
Wow.
Over 50 miles. I don't know that that's ever been done, and I'm almost certain it's never been done for a council person in their very first term. So we've made it a priority. And in the 2026 budget, we have over $3.9 million. Now, remember, we get $4 million a year in capital improvement money per district. $3.9 million of the 2026 term will go to resurfacing roads. A portion of that is sort of consolidation of funds that were not used in previous years, but you know, that's a lot of money.
So,
almost
all the cap is
going
to. That's
right. That's exactly right. In 2026. So every year, every even year, we do a city contract, and the odd years we do a pay-as-you-go contract through the county.
Now, I want to talk about this is more like a public safety thing, but it came up in a discussion the other day. about homelessness. And that's an issue. Heck, where we're sitting right now, man, at Airport and 65, we got it. But y'all definitely have it. I out of areas that I get text about, that doesn't mean we're the most, but when I get text about, you've got a lot of people in District 4 that lives in the show because they text me about that area. The range line 90, you know, there's a swath of ground there that I hear the stories from. Obviously, as a councilman, you do too.
Oh, yes, I live it. That's where I live. This is where I shop. This is where, you know, we conduct our business and, you know, where the Southwest Mobile County of Chamber of Commerce is, which I'm on the board,
and Councilman Woods. And then you've got homeless.
That's right. So I'm on the front line. You know, I probably spend, I don't know, 10 to 15 hours a week tracking down property owners or identifying encampments and coordinating with the public safety director, the homeless prevention coordinator, and just trying to play quarterback on getting the attention of the city out to these locations to fix it. Unfortunately, I don't think we're being effective at what we're doing. And I think there's a couple reasons for that, or many reasons for that. There has been several Supreme Court rulings that have sort of restricted what we can and cannot do, you know, what is speech and what is not. But the biggest problem we found, no matter how many services we provide, the biggest problem we found is private property owners allowing this to take place on their property. That you have these big wooded lots that have a nice stream through it, and then these folks who say don't want help, you know, when there are services offered, those people just sort of have a place to go get lost and not be a part of society and do all the things that they want to do at their, on their schedule and not worry about everybody else. So fortunately, our state partners have found this out as well. And, you know, through our work with them, on October 1st, there will be a new law that will allow the city to access private property in order to abate a public nuisance for excessive litter, junk, so on and so forth.
So right now, as it stands, if they're in a wooded section, 10-acre woodlot, whatever, they're doing that, unless there's some active, police can't go in there.
That's right. Or the property owner.
Property, I mean, I guess, yeah, because I think about it. I mean, I'm kind of a private property advocate, but so they can't. So even though you know the issue's going on in there, the city goes, well, we can't go in there. Or,
that's exactly right. And, you know, like I said, playing that quarterback role from time to time, when I know a problem exists, you know, I'm trying to reach out to the property owner and say, hey, look, you got all these people on your property. Can we go in there and clear them out? And they say, absolutely, go do it. So please go out there, clear them out. But it's a whack-a-mole situation. They just move from one property to the other. The property owner is unwilling to go sign a complaint and go to the, you know, nines with it. They're not marking their property. And, you know, I hope to start a purple paint campaign.
Yeah, just like, hey, like, you know, just no buy trespassing in the woods.
That's right. You know, you buy folks gallons of paint and say, paint your property so that when a trespassing call is made, the police can then sign the complaint themselves because it's been marked.
Okay. So that changes October 1st. New fiscal year, that changes?
October 1st. It will go into effect.
So at that point, give me a scenario what it looks like. So you constituent calls you. Says, Councilman, we got, there are a bunch of people that were out on the street here, but they're back in these woods.
That's right. So then we would dispatch, or we would request that the city dispatch a municipal enforcement officer to go investigate. They go investigate and they find, yes, this is a dump, or this is, you know, there's litter and excessive junk everywhere. It's getting in our waterways and everything else. That municipal enforcement officer then has the ability to start taking the necessary steps. Like it works exactly the same as a weed lien. Somebody's got grass that's over 10 inches. The city can go in there after they follow the procedure, go in there and cut that grass and then place a lien for that cost on that property owner's property. So I imagine once we do this 8, 10, 15 times, those property owners are going to start paying attention and maintaining their property as they should.
Yeah, I wonder how, I mean, at that level too, because we got to stop that problem, but then do they have to hire a private security for their investment property, you know, and that, like,
I think there is a solution. I think there's a collective property management solution that can exist. You know, I suspect that we can go knock on every door of the businesses in Tillman's Corner, put a contract in front of them and say, hey, we want you to give $1,000 a year to this effort, and we're going to hire one person, and their job is to mark your property and sign complaints when somebody trespasses or call the police when somebody's trespassing. And then that person shows up at court and then make sure the law is fully enforced. And I'm seeing, you know, these vagrancy laws are, you know, we can do better. I think we can do better as a city. We do need to hire more municipal enforcement officers. So when this budget is placed on my desk on August 20th, that's something I'm going to be looking for.
You know, think about this, and with the so much discussion going on with the mayoral race and who's going to build what, this and that, but it's going to go through y'all at the council.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I mean, they could say that they like this idea or that, but it comes to the council. Are we maxed out in spending programs right now, or builds or things we're doing? I mean, beyond like the stuff I said that's not sexy. Paving roads, doing sewers, but I'm talking about the things that get the headlines on TV.
Yeah, I think we should take the next 4 years and be a little bit boring and just do the 32 dive again, just run the ball, continue to check these legacy boxes. I mean, we spent this entire term knocking off one legacy problem after the other. I mean, the Civic Center was costing us $2 million a year to operate, and you know, many other legacy problems. Now that we've put them to bed, we need to turn our attention to the more mundane sort of things that government should be doing. So get back to the core function of what government is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about, not in your district, but, you know, the McGregor project, when I found out that, first of all, they had to dig through bedrock, I was like, oh, I didn't know. You know, that goes back to the old argument we had in school, whether Spring Hill was the last of the Appalachians or not. I didn't know there's bedrock there. But the gas line they replaced was 70 years old or something under there?
Yeah, that project, and this is something that I've learned, and people that have not done this will not know. From the time a project is an idea to the time its completion is a tremendous amount of time, and so many steps have to happen. I mean, you have to survey property, you have to acquire real estate, you have to locate utilities, you have to reach agreements with these utility providers, you have to go through bids and design, and you know, eventually you get a contractor, and then they start work. And that's what the general public sees, is just the work happening. They don't know that, you know, that duck's feet underneath the water is swimming away. It's still slow. It's still too slow, in my opinion. But that's just how it works. You know, moving a project from A to Z, there are so many moving parts that go into it.
Yeah, I will open this up to all members of the council and the mayor's office, anybody in the future. On these projects, and I'm it comes out in documents. I'm not saying it's not, it has the sunlight, but it just doesn't get the attention. Before a project starts, I would love somebody to come in and just sit and go, all right, Sullivan, here's the deal. It's going to take so long to do this project because did you know that there was all the 8 utility lines here got to be replaced? We had, you know, just put it in regular people speak that says this is why it's going to take that long, so people aren't wondering, riding down the road going, why is it taking them so long to do whichever project?
Yeah, we could probably do a better job as a government of telling our story. But the reality
is, stinks. I know it stinks, y'all. Here's why it's taking so long.
Yeah, and there are some things that are exploratory at the beginning and don't have funding for it. But if you don't start sort of planning, like the expansion of Halls Mill Road to 3 lanes, that's a discussion we're having now. It started now as an idea. Now, to get it to 3 lanes, you're going to have to replace 4 bridges. And you know,
just told me how much are the bridges are.
They're going to be tremendous costs. This is not going to be just out of the city's coffers. This is going to have to be state or federal or other, you know, sort of money sources. And it's going to be similar to a McGregor type project where, as you start that project out as an idea, you have to first survey the land, figure out what it's going to take to get it done. And you don't have any funding for it yet. And then you maybe get some money to do some design. And then, you know, you just sort of slowly moves along until, boom, you've got a bridge going over Mobile Bay.
Yes. Well, we'll see if we get to that point. People can get more information about your campaign. Where do they go?
Reynolds4Mobile.com for campaign-related issues. If you want to reach me on the city council, you can send me an email at council4@cityofmobile.org or give me a call at 251-208-7441.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Time to check in with my buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Start off with a precious metals question. What's gold doing? What's silver doing today, Ron?
Gold's right at $3,355 and silver's at $3,755. So, little good time to add to your stack. Prices are down. Premiums are down, too. We have quite a few items available at spot or just over spot. So I mean, come on, save some money, come in, add to your stack, and get it while it's down. It's been a kind of a profit-taking Monday, so a good time to buy. We've been pretty busy.
Yeah, I mean, that gold number's been something, but that silver making up that difference, that's been good to see as well.
Oh, yeah, and it's been holding it, too. It's been fluctuating between $37 and $38 for a few weeks. Nice and stable and not rising really fast, not falling either, so... Should instill confidence with people that prices are here to stay, at least for a while, and see how the economy does and what else Trump can do to fix it. But otherwise, I mean, it's a good idea with over $37 trillion in debt and over $1 trillion in interest, but that's on all of us, too, to have something that's actually worth something. I mean, you got to have dollars to help you out in case of an expense comes up. But, I mean, gold and silver are easy to turn back and forth into cold, hard cash.
Tell people how to come find you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can call us at 251-725-1590 or find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com.
Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile this Monday. Glad to have you along. We'll grab your text here in just a second. I want to check in with my friend David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars and talk about the inventory in financing. David, we talk about the vehicles all the time. Give us some options here on financing.
Yeah, we've always got good financing, and I don't think everybody actually realizes what all we do. I mean, we've got single-digit interest rates through your credit union and whatnot. We just don't do the secondary finance. I mean, we do people with primary credit. We've also got, rates in the fives, I think, right now, which is really good, and hopefully they're going down here soon. But once you get in the fives, a rate drop doesn't make that big of a difference in your payment or the total back. But we've got secondary financing, too, in bankruptcy. We've got some customers that are here now. They have their letter from the court stating they can buy a new one. They're actively in bankruptcy, and we're able to get them approved and actually put them in a car. So we can do the wide spectrum on credit. I mean, anything anybody needs credit-wise, I mean, we are here to help you.
Yeah, because you have selection, kind of what you're saying. It's not like you just have, okay, here's the finance. It's multiple sources.
Right, and we look at every source for every customer. I mean, we don't assume somebody's got this, that, the other. I mean, we want to get them the best term and the best rate we can get them. It's going to fit their budget. And of course, that helps us out at the same time to get the car delivered.
Okay. Well, tell them how to find you to check out the vehicles, but also to sit down and talk about these financing options.
We're at Highway 90 in Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can call us, and we'll go over anything over the telephone you want us to with you, 251-375-0068. Or go to the website. You can look at all the vehicles there, and there's actually a place to fill out a credit application. It's secure, so there's no way that anything will happen to anything. It comes directly to our desk. And that's lcmmotorcars.com.
Thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
You too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Let's grab some text here. Let's see. This. Oh, my gosh. I got to go back some distance here. This one, High Plains Drifter, said, I'm 50, and I've never seen much difference no matter who the mayor is. Have you? I have. And I'll say this, and I've there's some things. I mean, I don't agree with myself 100% of the time, but the Stimson administration has been the best thing I've seen in the mayoral side for Mobile. Absolutely, it's been the best. I mean, every decision I think is great, but it has been, in my lifetime, and maybe something happened when I was a kid that I wasn't processing, but since I've been an adult here, that the Stimson administration has been the best. So I did see a difference there. I think something did change with that. Now, what it does going forward, we're going to see. And we're going to have those folks on Thursday telling you why they're the person for the job. We'll see. Let's see. This from Hal said, I checked the numbers. I checked the numbers in Mobile. I'm not going to read your whole text, Hal, and you know why, because I'm saving part of that. But he said, I checked the numbers, and Mobile has a higher violent crime rate than D.C. Here's the numbers for D.C., 3,469 for 689,545 people. Mobile, 598,000. What is that, over a decade? Is that total violent crimes? because I saw some of the DC numbers. I think they're like, I remember seeing it on the screen. I thought it was close to DC, like a murder per day in DC. Right, we're not that level, but you said Mobile's violent crime rate is 2 times the national average. And violent crime is going to be, it's not just murder. So I need to get the definition of everything that falls under violent crime. I'm picturing it in my head, but right. Ultra Runner said, our downtown is slipping. This weekend I experienced aggressive panhandling, rampant homeless sleeping all over, low police presence, then 2 people shot, 1 block from Cathedral Square. Trump is cleaning up D.C. Can't we do better? You know, and it's going to be, these are the questions too. If you have a specific question that way, be a good idea to email it to Sean at fmtalk1065.com so we can put that in a question form to the people who want to be the next mayor. Unnamed texter says, I get so tired of these people you interview that want to hire more people and spend more money. You don't need to do that, Sean. All you need to do is put these folks in jail. When they come to that courtroom, they go to jail. Okay, but then what happens when they get out of jail? If you're talking about the homeless issue, when they get, and there's two different, there's probably more than two, but I'll say there's 2 different groups we're talking about. They're the people who don't want to be homeless, right? And they're people that are sleeping in their cars or they're couch surfing or all that, that some services from the city could probably get them back on the right foot, help them out. And then there's people who want no help at all, right? And what do we do with those folks? Except take them to Pascagoula. I didn't know, but. All right, coming right back. It's time for a checkup on the Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5, and it's time for a checkup, and glad to see a new face in here. Nothing against Dr. Mishad, if you're listening, but Dr. Jeff Cochran of Southern Cancer Center joins us. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And I'm trying to get you in trouble with Doc, but it's all right. We're gonna get, no, and so you and I had a conversation. We asked for everybody else, but during the news break, we talked about it. Where you're from, where you hail from.
Come from essentially the other side of the state. My wife and I grew up just a little bit outside Chattanooga, a little suburb called Signal Mountain. We actually met at a camp. I was driving boats at the camp, and she was a counselor, and kind of met in college, and then kind of went our separate ways for a few years, and then kind of reconnected, and we got married in 2005, and then moved off to Memphis in 2007, and kind of then, after we did all the training, kind of came back, and now here we are.
That's kind of Hollywood movie stuff, though. For a second, you meet at summer camp,
yeah,
and
guess.
Then you're pulled apart, and then you're back together. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, I don't know really that we planned it that way, but yeah, not quite the high school sweetheart thing, but not too far off.
That's pretty good summer camp meeting. Good stuff.
Anybody that thinks that I'm, you know, funny on a consistent basis and can put up with me is a keeper. So
you went with it. Hey, so if y'all are from up there, you know, the other end of the state in Tennessee, what brings you down here to Mobile?
Well, really the job. That was, you know, you do all your everything in training is, you know, one step at a time, and you don't really think about the big picture until, you know, you're kind of faced with that decision.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well, I got to do my residency now. I got to do my fellowship now. Oh,
right.
I got to get a job now. You know, so we started the interview trail, and this is where it led us. And we had a great set of interviews down here, and we said, let's do it. So,
and yeah. And it's, you know, there's a lot to offer down here. It's a great place to be, but it's a great, just watching what's happened at Southern Cancer Center over the years and knowing Dr. Mishad as long as I've had time to, decades and decades. You've been with some great folks.
I mean, that's you know, that essentially what sold me on them. Because, you know, I mean, you meet all types and, you know, by and large, you know, everybody you meet on the interview trail is pretty cool, you know, but it's still kind of a job,
mm-hmm,
you know,
sure.
in and of itself. But, you know, when I talked with Dr. McAvoy, one of the partners. Mm-hmm. He called, I think it was like Tuesday or something, but when he kind of, he was on, it was back in February, and it was kind of, he was actually on this spring break, but when we talked, it was just a phone interview kind of thing.
Right.
But we ended up talking for like an hour.
And just then, like normal.
Normal conversation. Yeah. And then when I came down for the first interview and then came back for a second interview, you know, that just continued with everybody that I met, you know, just like, it was, I mean, I'd never met these people prior to me, you know, physically being
right
in the city, you know, for this event. And, you know, a lot of, and sometimes, you know, the dinners can be very, you know, can be very formal, like, you know, and there's certain questions, you know, it is kind of dating in a sense, and, you know, but you have to, but there's a lot of cut and dry stuff, but I mean, but everything about it was just so natural. It was like, you know, I was talking to a relative, or, you know,
right,
catching up on old, or a friend that I hadn't seen in years,
right,
you know, even though I'd never met these people. And one of the big things that always kind of, I was looking for, you know, in a practice was, you know, there's always different reasons, you know, you need to be in this part of the country, or, you know, this, you know, pay structure, or
right,
this is, I'm looking for this particular aspect of the job. But one of those, the biggest things that I put emphasis on is, you know, the job's hard enough as it is, you know, so you really want to get along with the people that
you're going to have to see a whole bunch.
I mean, cause you're going to see these people probably more, you know, in a lot of ways more than a lot of your family.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, and you're not necessarily always going to get along with everybody all the time, but I mean, but that's what it was. It felt like home. It felt like family. It was that kind of like small town feel, you know,
it's pretty cool to talk about. Cause you said the dating term, like you've got the cut and dry, obviously they're interested in you cause you're bona fides in medicine,
right,
but then there's this other part that people never think about for physicians. Actually, they're coworkers, and they have to.
Oh yeah. I mean, cause again, you know, you're taking call, or, hey, this emergency comes up, and, you know, and I got to go do this. And, you know, you just want to know that people have your back and are, mm-hmm, you know, you know, cause they're, you know, cause even, you know, within a practice, people have their patient base, and they're, you know, they have their clinic to run, and you've got right your clinic to run. And it's just what I saw when I came down here was, even though you have all these docs doing all this other stuff, it all worked. It all gelled. And, you know, and like I said, I mean, to be able to feel like I knew, you know, even though we're going through the cut and dry stuff, you know, I mean, I think the first dinner we had, it was Lauren, our director, Dr. Heller, Arledge, and McAvoy, and my wife and myself, you know what I mean? And, you know, I think they blocked off like 2.5 hours or something,
yeah,
out of their time. And I mean, we filled it up, you know, it was like, just because we were just talking and having a good time. And it was like,
right,
it literally was like going out to dinner with friends and family that you hadn't seen. And I mean, you know, and if you can do
it's
that.
It's a great testament. I mean, for patients
really
to think about it, like they're listening to go, these folks get along at that level too. I mean, we know that you're all very good at what you do in treating cancer, but to know that, like, that camaraderie.
Oh, because you can't fake that stuff.
Right.
Like,
true.
You know, you can be, you know, you can be the smartest, the best at this, you know, what have you, but people can tell, like, if, you know, the chemistry's mm-hmm not there, like, and that's what this was. It was just, I mean, it just felt natural and easy, and it, you know, it wasn't forced. Like, you know, they gave up their time because they were looking for someone to come down to fill the need. I was looking
right
to fill that need and find a practice to start.
The match was made.
I mean, right?
It's good. So let's talk about this too. So you come down here and you're coming to like a dream team of people in the cancer world. You're coming in. What type of cancer are you interested in? What do you focus on? Like
all of it. We're gonna do okay all of it. I mean, at least at the beginning, you know, I mean, you know, as you start and you build your practice, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to do one thing more. So,
okay,
so yeah, because I think, because that one kind of, I think, pigeonholes you a little bit. And, you know, as you're building a practice,
right,
you know, you need to be seeing patients.
Sure.
And, you know, but one of the cool things about oncology is that, you know, with other fields of medicine, you know, sometimes, you know, like my brother, he does orthopedics. I mean,
okay,
you know, he may have newer technologies, but he's essentially replacing knees and hips all day.
Right.
And that's okay. That's what he likes to do.
Yes.
But the cool thing about, you know, oncology is that, you know, I can go, you know, hey, this is, you know, like Taylor Swift, she's got her Eras tour. You know,
right.
Hey, this can be my, you know, my colon cancer decade.
Right.
You know, this is going to be, you know, my lung cancer era. You know, it's like there's just so many cool technologies and treatments coming out all the time.
But all the time is the thing that gets me as an outsider. I mean, it keeps my hair blown back just hearing about the things like from 1 year. It's not just in this decade we made this advancement. Oh, yeah. It's like last year we're doing this and now it's, I'm blown away with technology.
I was talking to we're out, you know, meeting doctors in the area this week with the marketing department. We kind of ran across a drug rep and he had introduced himself and I just said, hey, nice to meet you. And he told me what the drug he was talking about. And I asked him a question about it because when I was taking my boards last year, you know, I was doing the board review course and they were talking about, you know, this particular medicine and, you know, the criteria that got it to be approved.
Right.
And now they have more information that criteria that the company did a study and it's already better than, you know,
than it was just
a year ago. And I mean,
right.
And that's happening all across the board in terms of cancer. I mean, the stuff that I was in training, you know, 5 years ago that we were, you know, presenting in our journal clubs is practice changing technology or practice changing treatments is now the standard of care and is already kind of falling by the wayside because we got newer, better stuff coming out.
Yeah. I mean, is there like watching this through your eyes, you know, and all the other doctors at Southern Cancer Center, are we at a, always screw up a logarithmic or exponentially. So let's just go, are we at an inflection point or is the pacing going up faster than before?
You have to understand how, you know, how, you have to have kind of a basic understanding of how research does so that you can apply it to your cancer. But to say, you know, where we're going in terms of that, you really have to have more of a research brain. And that's not really
your front lines.
Yeah.
You're not ivory tower.
Right.
Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, but there is, right. I have learned over time that you have to, but no, I'm, you know, I'm the guy, like you said, I'm your patient. I'm seeing patients and, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think it will be interesting to see if you ask me to kind of predict a little bit. The only way to answer that for sure, you know, because who knows what, like, you know, you're seeing AI as a real hot topic now.
Sure.
Who knows where that's going to go and take us in the future. You know, I think the kind of the rate, I mean, it's still.
Looking in the rear view. Like, I can't say how steep a climb, right? Because I can't see how
right.
the front. But behind us, it looks like.
I think what kind of to help determine the rate of how things change, it's at least in oncology, I would say that it kind of goes back to how, you know, how quickly do technologies, like basic science technologies, change our understanding of the disease.
Right.
Because, you know, when you hear, you know, people like Dr. Michaud and my program director, for a time back when he was training, he said that he gave it up for a short period of time and went back to just do internal medicine because he was so frustrated with the lack of treatments options that he just kind of felt like he was making people sicker and
right.
not really making a huge difference. Well, now with newer, better treatment regimens, you know, we're training in certain types of cancer, we're training the immune system.
Blows my little mind up, man.
I mean, and I've seen it. Like, it's crazy. I mean, you know, in decades, and there's nothing wrong because it was the science we had. So I guess to say that, you know, as the basic, you know, if we find a gene or a mutation, and you're seeing that a lot already now with a lot of what we call next gen sequencing, you know, that's where they biopsy the tumor and then we send the tissue off to run all these really special tests. And, you know, if we find certain mutations for things, we can say, oh, well, you know, so you coming in as the patient, hey, but sir or ma'am, you know, this is what we see. And, that, you know, we're not doing chemotherapy over here. We're going to either, you know, we can give you a pill for this or we're going to give you some immunotherapy.
Because it's customized to that person.
It's becoming that. And yeah. So as we understand the basic science better, that's where you're going to see that's where AI may change things. So to say where we're going is going to be very hard because, like I said, if AI or somebody comes, you know, like, we were kind of watching, you know, in terms of like, we were watching some true crime stuff
mm-hmm.
Over the weekend. And, you know, my wife was talking, I was like, well, how did they not know that? Well, the stories we're watching happened back in the 70s and 80s, you know, when they didn't have, when they didn't, weren't using like DNA and all that kind of stuff. And now we're just like, oh, well, you know,
you assumed it all.
You're oh, on the cop show, you know, they would have said they'd have got them like, you know, way back when. And so it's kind of like that, as, you know, as, and so, you know, how do they do that? Well, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, but as we understand the diseases better, you know, that's where all that stuff's going to take. So when you see somebody come through with a breakthrough, you know, hey, this gene or this, you know, this happens in these, you know, cancers. And like I said, that's led to things like what we call targeted therapy, which is, you know, a lot of times can be given in a pill form. I mean, right. You know, I saw a patient in training that had, metastatic melanoma, you know, brain mets, the whole thing. Yeah. And just in his follow-ins, and he had one of these things where we could give him, you know, not chemo, but immunotherapy. And we watched his cancer melt on the just serial scans. Like, I mean, he went from like, you know, stuff that he would have had to have, you know, brain surgery. Now, again, and these are very broad terms. This is not
sure,
gonna
be
for, you know, for necessary for every cancer that walks in the door. But I mean, but for those kind of things, you know, people that, that is an insane technology.
Yeah.
That, you know, hey, we can give you a liquid medicine. It's going to really make your immune system really mad, and it's going to fight your cancer. And there's going to be some side effects potentially, but it's much more tolerable and better for you than what we traditionally had.
Yeah.
And like I said, over the course of the time that we were saying, like, he had no evidence of cancer. I mean, it was crazy.
It is amazing. And it's like every time we sit down and talk, there's going to be something new. So I can't wait for you to come back and tell us more about it. I think you've fallen in with the right bunch of folks at Southern Cancer Center. It's a good folks. You seem like your personality fits exactly with them.
Well, good. Glad to be here.
It's Dr. Jeff Cochran. You can see him at Southern Cancer Center, and we'll get him back on the show soon.